Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Without getting into a whole political debate here, immigration has a big role to play in the music we'll be hearing in the next hour. The Grammy-winning Cajun band Beausoleil proudly keep alive the Cajun culture of southwest Louisiana, a culture that grew up in the early 19th century when the French-speaking Acadians were deported by the English from their homes in Canada's maritime provinces. Some of them settled in the bayou, and the Acadians became Cajuns. Beausoleil plays their music for us later. But first, a new movie tells a troubling tale of illegal immigration on a galactic scale. They came... Sorry, Irene, I'm going to need some reverb for this. Thanks.
They came for our planet. They stayed to rock.
100 years ago, all alone and walking down the dusty road, I met a multi-headed stranger.
Okay, so they stayed to bluegrass, I guess. The point is, Earth has been invaded by two agents of the planet Hundo, who were bent on taking our world for their people. But when they heard music, something unknown back on Hundo, they were unable to resist its lure. The film called The History of Future Folk tells the story of how General Trias and the mighty Kevin came here to wipe us out, but ended up rocking us instead. The History of Future Folk was written by J. Anderson Mitchell and directed by him and Jeremy Kip Walker, and it stars Nils Dallaire and Jay Kleitz, who are the real-life duo Future Folk. Nils and Jay are here, in costume, to play for us, and Jay Anderson, or John, is here in the Soundcheck studio, too. Guys, Hondo.
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 Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having us.
John, let me start with you. Was this a band before it was a film?
Yes, it was. These guys had been doing gigs in kind of small dive bars, and, you know, they were friends of ours, so they would play at parties. You know, if we got together for a birthday party or something, they would play. So this is something that Jeremy and I always just felt fortunate as filmmakers. You know, we always had these guys kind of in our back pocket. So, you know, as filmmakers, you know, we've been trying to get a feature made for about, 10 years. And we had some fall through, and it got really frustrating. And we finally said, all right, you know what? We got to, like, just take stock, figure out what we have. And, you know, we had our house. We shot the majority of the movie, actually, in our house. And then we had this great band that we knew. So we went to work writing their backstory and, you know, figuring out, okay, this band exists and they're great, but how did they get here?
Right.
And
that's, so it's a documentary.
Yeah. When you see it, you'll see it's a very serious documentary.
In a week where we've been talking about a lot of movies, some of them with really big budgets, like, you know, the Superman movie, Man of Steel, and World War Z, the budget for this film seems like it was probably coffee and donuts.
It was coffee and donuts. Tons of favors. Jeremy has been a producer in New York City pretty much ever since we got here in 2000. So he just has tons of contacts and people that owe him favors. And, you know, so we basically just called in everything we had. And, you know, it shows at points. But we think, you know, the really nice thing that we've heard about the film is that's the charm of it in a lot of ways.
It is an utterly charming and hilarious film called The History of Future Folk. Which is available via video on demand and iTunes. And there's a special screening at the Lower East Side Film Festival this Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Crosby Street Hotel. All right, let's meet future folk. Nils and Jay. Nils, you are General Trias.
I am General Trias.
Jay, you are the mighty Kevin.
I am indeed. Hondo.
Hondo. So how did the two of you come to look and sound the way you do? And for those of you listening, you must check out the video when we post this online.
Well, Jay and I met through a mutual friend.
and immediately started collaborating on an equally absurd project that was called Who is Wilford Brimley, which was a one-act musical about the life and times of Wilford Brimley.
Who was Wilford Brimley?
He is an enigma wrapped in a mystery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wrapped in bacon.
Planet all unto himself in a way.
And, you know, we were both musicians. Jay was an actor, and we started kicking around ideas. Jay had some songs.
Yeah, I was probably listening to a little too much David Bowie at the time, and I had this sort of idea for this folky space album. And when we wrapped up Who is Wilford Brimley the Musical, I came to Nils and played a couple of these songs, and then it just sort of grew from there. It kind of became, well, dude, what if we were the aliens? And and that's how it just kind of grew out of that.
You know, and I think it really, everything sort of germinated from this, you know, this idea of roots music from another planet.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a really interesting idea that maybe we can, there would be a whole nother show to explore it. But John, the idea that there is a civilization somewhere that has never heard music.
Yeah.
It's a pretty fascinating idea.
That was one of the things, you know, as soon as Jeremy and I were starting to think, like, okay, you know, who are these guys and why are they here? We were still kind of on the fence about making the movie, but when we had that idea, like, oh, you know, what if they came from a place where there was no music, and that's why...
That's why they can't bring themselves to destroy the human race and take over the planet.
And that felt like a great in for us. And from there, everything just kind of started to flow. And we felt like, all right, this is the project that we want to do.
It's called The History of Future Folk. And in this scene, Nils Dallaire, as General Trias, is talking to his Earthling daughter, played by the young actress Onata April, and is telling her a bedtime story about Hondo.
I know you don't want to go to bed, but if you don't, Mommy's going to come in here and she's going to get mad at both of us.
You tell me the story, then I'll get in bed.
All right. Once upon a time, on a planet called Hondo, there was a little boy named Trias. Everyone on Hondo was scared because there was a ginormous comet in space heading right for their planet. Trias promised his mommy that one day he would find a way to stop the comet and to save all of Hondo. So when he was old enough, he became a general in the Hondonian army. He didn't want to leave his mommy and his friends behind, but he had to go out into space and find another planet for them to live on.
Did he say Hondo?
He did. He said, Hondo, everyone. I'll find another planet for us to live on. I'll miss you.
And he had the magic potion with him.
Yep. He had a magic potion. It would make everybody on the new planet fall asleep when he got there.
And that is the beginning of the story of The History of Future Folk, the film by J. Anderson Mitchell and Jeremy Kip Walker, starring Nils Dallaire and Jay Kleitz, who are both with me here in the Soundcheck studio, and J. Anderson Mitchell, John, here as well. So one of the great sort of recurring tropes in the film, John, is that General Trias is telling his story to his kid, who thinks it's just a bedtime story, and then to his listeners in the club before he hooks up with the mighty Kevin, who also think, oh, this is like really, you know, kind of shtick. It's like patter.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it plays well, especially, you know, for me personally, when it's in the club and, you know, as he's doing the stuff, people think that it's a stand-up act. But the whole thing was actually born out of, you know, when you have a movie with no budget and it's sci-fi, you can never put a camera in space. You know, there's a comet that's headed towards their home planet, and it'd be great to see that. But, you know, obviously we just don't have the money to. You hear, you know, everything, you know, we try to create dramatic scenes where you have characters interacting and talking about these things that are coming, you know, to destroy them, but we never actually get to see them. So, yeah, the whole story element, talking to the daughter and stuff like that, came out of basically a lack of budget.
But you did have the guys from Future Folk.
We did.
They were there in your back pocket. That's right. In our studio. Jay plays the guitar. Nils plays the banjo. They're both in character, in costume, which took a bit of doing before we went on the air. Guys, you want to do a song for us?
We'd love to, absolutely.
Sure. This is a song about our vocation back on Hondo before we came to Earth. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Oh, well, I grew up on my planet farming space worms. Space worms can always be found. But here on Earth, as far as I can discern, there just ain't no space worms around. What can I do? I'm simple farming man, light years away from my home. It's mighty hard to farm this planet's land. Space worms refuse to grow. Oh, well, I grew up on the planet farming space worms. Space worms can always be found. But here on Earth, as far as I can discern, there just ain't no space worms around. Sell my 14-legged mule. Without no space worms, I can't put up a fight. This planet can be so cruel. Oh, well, I grew up on my planet farming space worms. The space worms can always be found. Here on Earth, as far as I can discern, there just ain't no space worms around. It's been strung on, but I refuse to stop. Farming worms is what I was born to do. If you can find me a real good space worm bride, honey, I'll be good to you. Well, I grew up on my planet farming space worms, where space worms can always be found. But here on Earth, as far as I can discern, there just ain't no space worms around. There just ain't no space worms around.
Hondo.
Hondo.
From the band Future Folk, comprised of General Trias on banjo and the Mighty Kevin on guitar. That's Nils Dallaire and Jake Leitz, respectively. A song called Space Worms, which does appear in the film, The History of Future Folk. When you guys are playing, even before the film was being produced, were you guys playing in costume? Were you playing with the buckets on your head? And
we always did, yeah. Funny, you know, this film is very much a family affair. A lot of our friends, close friends, worked on it. Of course, we knew John and Jeremy for many years. And one of our producers, John Bulette, is, again, an old friend of ours. And when we first started the band, he was actually substitute teaching. And making little space helmets out of actual red buckets was a project he did with the kids in class.
Wow.
So he initially showed us how to, you know, had this idea, and he showed us, and that's how we ended up in these red buckets.
Yeah. So, and how soon after that did you regret being in the red buckets?
Almost immediately.
First gig.
Yeah.
First gig when we realized we couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And then it was a series of trips to the hardware store to get bigger and bigger drill bits to make bigger and bigger ear holes in the bucket. But we've never really figured out how to get the perfect oral experience from within these things.
Yeah.
But it looks great.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looks cool.
There is video on the website at soundcheck.org. The film is called The History of Future Folk. So General Trias comes to Earth first, and his job is to destroy all of us so that the Hondonians can come and live on this planet.
Sorry for that.
He falls in love the first time he hears music, which is in, it's like a Home Depot or something.
Costco.
It's in a Costco. So he can't bring himself to destroy the planet, becomes a banjo player. Kevin is sent to
finish the job.
Finish the job.
Right.
And in an hilarious scene, General Treyas explains without saying a word to you, Kevin, what music is like, with this hilarious kind of neck-bending, you know, segue from one kind of music to another, all played on the banjo.
Yep.
Who did you kind of make that up as you went along? Or?
Yes, that was one of my assignments when we were in pre-production, and definitely one of the most amazing weeks of my life, being able to be sort of sequestered in a space with a very specific environment, which was to create a banjo music montage that weaves together basically the history of music. You know, in under 2 minutes. So, you know, there was a whole, you know, selecting the pieces and arranging them and then working them together was a challenge. But, you know, I'm very happy with how it worked out and very proud of that particular scene.
So what happens is now Kevin is a convert as well and joins with General Treyas. He becomes the mighty Kevin. And so is born the band Future Folk, although they are not named that. Right off the bat, Dee Snider of the band Twisted Sister, John, has a pivotal role to play in this film.
It's about halfway through the movie. Dee Snider himself,
he runs them.
He runs the bar where originally General Treyas is alone on Earth, and he's gigging there, and it's kind of this divey little place in Williamsburg. So in the first scene, you see Dee Snider up there. Very professionally announcing mm-hmm. that General Treyas is about to take the stage. And, you know, it's great because, you know, it's an independent film and you have an audience sitting down and they don't know exactly what they're expecting. But when you see Dee Snider in the first scene of the movie, you can kind of see people going, is that Dee Snider? Did he really get Dee
Snider?
Exactly
what happened, yeah.
Yeah.
So in this scene, Kevin and General Treyas have gotten themselves in trouble with the cops and are looking for a place to hide, and they choose the back room of the Trash Bar mm-hmm. in Williamsburg, where Dee Snider's character is the manager.
You want to stay in the back room? Something wrong at home or something?
No, we just need a place to lay low for a little while.
Trouble with the cops?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I think I'll believe him on that one. All right, here's the deal. You guys can stay back there as long as you want, under one condition. I want you to rock this place out every night. That'll be your rent. Think you can handle that?
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, yeah, one other thing. I know what you should call yourselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know us, my name is General Treyas.
And I'm the mighty Kevin.
And we are Future Folk.
So that is a scene from The History of Future Folk, the movie by J. Anderson Mitchell and Jeremy Kip Walker. John's here with me in the studio and starring the musical duo of Nils Dallaire and Jay Kleitz, who are both here as General Treyas and the mighty Kevin. Can you guys do another little Hondonian bluegrass tune?
We'd be happy to.
Sure. This one is sort of about the... you know, the little surprises that that we found when we first came to Earth. 2, 3, 4.
I like the way your planet feels. I like to smell the daffodils and taste the tasty Earth meals. Then swim with timid harbor seals. Your planet's stocked with lots of beer. Plus, I like actor Greg Kinnear. But there's one problem still here. I can't breathe in your atmosphere. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. My lungs are starting to sear. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. Still, I can't take this helmet off. I like Buccaneers. But there's one problem still here. I can't breathe in your atmosphere. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. My lungs are starting to sear. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere. I just can't breathe in your atmosphere. I cannot breathe in your atmosphere.
The band Future Folk, I Cannot Breathe in Your Atmosphere. Nils Dallaire as General Trias and Jay Kleit as the Mighty Kevin, banjo and guitar respectively, and Jay Anderson Mitchell, the writer and one of the two directors, along with Jeremy Kip Walker of the film The History of Future Folk, all with me here in the Soundcheck studio. Who writes the songs?
It's a collaborative process. I write the lion's share of the music and lyrics, but it's always been a collaboration between the two of us.
Because Nils, it seemed at one point in the song that you wanted to go in a kind of jazzy direction, and then yeah. Jay comes in and clearly wants to be like a R&B screamer.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, we both have. I mean, you know, we're both music lovers, and we love all different kinds of music. I definitely tend towards more the jazz funk end of the spectrum,
and I like to rock.
So why bluegrass?
Well, I knew how to play the banjo, and it's okay. it seemed appropriate, and it was also for the joke. I think it's sort of the high tech, low tech, the tension between those two things. The this roots music again from outer space.
We were fairly sure that there hadn't been an alien act with a banjo in it, so
right.
It seemed like an original idea.
Whereas Bowie had sort of done the alien with electric guitar thing, years ago.
Yeah. He missed an opportunity by not using banjo.
Now, John, locations for the film. I mean, much of it you said was your house,
yep.
But also the Trash Bar is a real place mm-hmm. there in Williamsburg. So, what kind of? I mean, there's a number of scenes where you know General Trias still has to try and save Honda. He still has to try and save the planet, and to do that, he has a job, a kind of a janitorial job at a kind of space museum.
Right.
Where is that?
So that's in Long Island.
Really?
But we had to actually cobble together a few different locations because obviously the only way that you could destroy a comet in deep space is to get hands on what the Earthlings have, which is a decommissioned nuclear missile.
Obviously.
I mean, that's
obviously. So, you know, for Jeremy's task as producer and locations department was to come up with, like, okay, where could something like this feasibly happen? And this place, this actual aerospace museum in Long Island, is great, but they didn't actually have, you know, a nuclear missile lying around. So we had to cobble together a few different locations, and you know, we have some different ones from North Dakota and different little old abandoned aerospace places throughout the U.S.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give away the ending of the film. You'll just have to watch it to see if General Trias can both play the banjo and save his world and ours all at the same time. The film is called The History of Future Folk, and the guys, you guys have a record. I mean,
that's right. Yeah, we have, we're just
volume one.
Digital distribution, so you can buy our album. It's called The History of Future Folk, Volume 1. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I think, I don't even know how many songs are, 10 songs, 12 songs, somewhere in that range. All of the songs you hear in the movie are on the album, as well as a bunch of others that describe the experience of being a Hondonian on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Which is apparently a bright red experience.
Always.
Watch the video from today's session on our website at soundcheck.org. Watch the film at a special screening at the Lower East Side Film Festival this Saturday, the 22nd, at 8 p.m. at the Crosby Street Hotel. Jay Anderson Mitchell and Jeremy Kip Walker are the directors. John's been here with me in the studio. Nils Dallaire and Jay Kleit, the stars of the film and of the band Future Folk. Guys, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So
I'm going to throw something out here. We want to bring Soundcheck and WNYC to Hondo so we can work out the details
right.
off the air. But I think that could be a big hit.
You guys are huge there.
Hondo. All right. Guys, thanks very much.
All right, thanks so much.
This is Soundcheck.
We're not disagreeing that we're not human beings, 'cause y'all got one liver and we got 16.
drink with us and you'll see we're the same except for chromosome Z.
Up next, it might sound like science fiction and maybe even the makings of a comedy, but computers can now pretty accurately figure out your taste in movies based on your taste in music, and vice versa. We'll find out how from a music data expert next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This week on the show, we've been talking a lot about the music found in movies, from space alien comedies to zombie thrillers to indie documentaries. But what if you could predict who would like each of those types of films based on their musical taste, or, conversely, what type of music the fans of these films might like? Well, it turns out that we can do just that. Brian Whitman, co-founder of the Echo Nest, a music data company, is the guy who recently figured this out. He joins me now on the line from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Brian.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. So this is based on a musical identity thing, right?
That's right. Yeah. At the Echo Nest, we care a lot about people and music and understanding as much as we can about them both to figure out everything we can about the listeners of music and everything within the music itself.
So once you do that, you don't just know what kind of music people like, but you can then predict other things they will like across media?
Absolutely. Since we collect so much data, we're able to know anonymously the kinds of things people like outside of music, and we've been doing a lot of work trying to figure out if there's correlations between those things.
Mm-hmm. Given the news recently, when someone hears someone on the radio say, "We collect so much data," what data do you guys collect, and where are you getting it from?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very conscious about privacy and security and all of that, but what we do is we work with most music streaming providers. We provide, if you've ever on a service like RDO, for example, and you get a recommendation, that's what we power. So we're able to look at, you know, anonymously everyone's music activity across the entire internet. We get, you know, hundreds of data points a second coming in through all over the place.
So, you know, if I'm on eMusic and I'm looking at band A, and at the bottom of the page it says, you might also like bands C, Y, and X,
That's the Echo Nest. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay. So, once you have somebody's general musical identity figured out, you've been able to predict before political affiliations, right? You found Democrats and Republicans tend to like different types of music?
Yes, they absolutely do, yeah.
And so how does it work with movies? I mean, you know, Democrat-Republican seems a pretty black and white kind of thing. How do you predict whether someone's going to like one type of film or another?
So what we've been doing with movies is interesting. We've been breaking down movies the same way we do it with music. So we'll know that someone likes, you know, Rihanna, and they'll also like Toy Story 3. But we go a little bit deeper than that. We know that Toy Story 3 is a Pixar film, and it's animated, and it's, you know, mostly for families. So we were able to link together not just movies and music, but sort of the properties of each.
What kind of properties would we be talking about?
So for movies, you know, we're looking at stuff like the genre of the film, who directed it, the words people use on the internet to describe the movie, you know, how well it was received, you know, if it's a big mainstream film or an indie one, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So some of this stuff is pretty obvious. I mean, fans of country music tend to like Westerns. I certainly understand that.
Right.
One of your surprising results was that fans of Pixar films don't have the same musical tastes as people who like other general family films.
Yep.
What would an example of some of those other family films be?
So, you know, if you look at non-Pixar films, we're talking more like live-action Hannah Montana-style stuff, you know, Disney movies, things like that, and non-Pixar Disney movies. What's interesting about looking at Pixar specifically is Pixar is a definite brand, and it has a style, and we're trying to figure out if there's something about that, even though they're both family films across the board. Is there something about Pixar movies that tend to have different music tastes? And the answer was yes. You know, we found a much different kind of music taste for Pixar movies.
So family films, you found people are more apt to enjoy country artists like Martine McBride or pop stars like Katy Perry. Pixar fans, if you like Toy Story or Finding Nemo or WALL-E, more likely to enjoy urban-oriented pop artists like the Black Eyed Peas or this guy, Justin Timberlake.
As long as I got my suit and tie, I'ma leave it all on the floor tonight. And you got fixed up to the nines, gonna show you a good thing. Dressed in that dress I like. Love is
Justin Timberlake's Suit and Tie is more likely to appeal to fans of Pixar films like Toy Story than to general family films, the Hannah Montanas and Disney films and such. Brian Whitman is co-founder of the Echo Nest, a music data company based in Massachusetts, on the line with us and talking about these unusual correlations and correspondences between your musical identity and the kinds of movies you might like. Why would there be a distinction, and one big enough for you to be able to mine out of the music data like that?
We would think that music identity, you know, the way you listen to music and how you do it and the artists you listen to tell you a lot about yourself. It's a very personal and, for a lot of people, private thing. And the theory here, and we've done this across the board, not just with movies, but other forms of media and politics and other demographics, is that it just unlocks a lot about yourself. And people should start thinking about, you know, what they're giving away when they tell Facebook what they're listening to and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of personality in the music you listen to, and we're just showing over and over again that, you know, there's something to be looking at here.
Yeah, another surprise in your findings: sci-fi fans and fantasy fans, who we usually lump together as sci-fi fantasy fans, are in fact two very different groups of people.
Yeah, we found that fantasy fans had a different kind of diversity of music taste. So we track that, you know, sort of how many different kinds of artists you listen to or different kinds of styles of music. And, you know, fantasy fans, for some reason, had a lot lower diversity in their music listening taste by almost a 2x margin over sci-fi fans. So it's something interesting to think about. You know, you usually group those things together, but in reality, there are very different kinds of people.
So would this apply both to fiction, you know, to people who are reading sci-fi or fantasy books, as it would to the movies?
Yeah, so that's something we're looking at now, is actually books as well. I can't give you any numbers on it, but I'm going to guess that yes, the genre, you know, crosses media boundaries for sure.
So what you found at the Echo Nest is that fantasy fans are more middle of the road. They go for the Rihannas and the Rascal
right.
Flatts.
Yeah, the popular, you know, stuff within a single genre, you know, usually that's what people listen to.
But sci-fi fans?
All over the place, you know, Hendrix and Aerosmith, Lady Gaga, all kinds of things.
All right, so Jimi Hendrix, a little classic rock for the sci-fi fans listening in. Sci-fi fans, we're told, tastes tend more towards classic rock. There's one classic rocker interpreting another. Jimi Hendrix doing Cream's Sunshine of Your Love. We're talking with Brian Whitman, co-founder of the Echo Nest, about how your musical taste might predict your taste in films. And Brian, just a final question. Is there a practical use for this? Does this suggest that the people who choose music for films might want to think twice about who their audience is and what their music tastes are?
Well, absolutely, and I think they already do a lot of that, and there's a lot of obvious things here. But the way we're looking at it is a much bigger scale, trying to figure out across all forms of media what just knowing some small pieces about you can tell us and help you recommend and understand and discover more music for sure.
Brian Whitman is a PhD and co-founder of the Echo Nest, a music data company based in Somerville, Massachusetts. Brian, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, John.
This is Soundcheck. According to Brian Whitman's complicated mathematical equations, the top movies preferred by fans of this artist, Amy Grant, are The Blind Side, The Sound of Music, and the Christian film Fireproof. Sorry, Brian, but even I might have been able to make those predictions. You can hear Amy Grant on soundcheck.org tomorrow at 2 p.m. She'll join us in the studio to talk about her latest effort called How Mercy Looks From Here and to play some of it live for us in the studio. Up next, the Cajun superstars Beausoleil bring the swamp and a whole lot more to the studio. From James Brown to the music of Molly, we'll talk about their recent influences and hear them play live. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When fiddler Michael Doucet started the band Beausoleil back in the late 70s, it was with the idea of preserving a Cajun culture that seemed to be disappearing. 35 years later, Cajun music, Cajun food, even the Cajun language have all come roaring back. And Beausoleil have started stretching beyond Louisiana. This piece, called Bamako, is a tribute to the capital of Mali in West Africa, the wellspring of the music that became the blues. And Beausoleil's new album, From Bamako to Karen Crow, has other surprises, too. We'll hear about them in a moment, but first, let's hear the band playing the two-step to Port Arthur live on Soundcheck. Live Cajun music from the band Beausoleil here in the Soundcheck studio, the two-step to Port Arthur. It's the lead-off track on the band's latest record called From Bamako to Karen Crow. As usual, Beausoleil features Michael Doucet singing, playing violin, and nowadays, apparently, playing accordion, too. Good to see you again, Michael.
Good to see you, John. You never know.
David Doucet singing and playing guitar. We heard Mitchell Reed on fiddle, Billy Ware on percussion, Tommy Alessi behind our drum kit, Bill Bennett on bass. And, Michael, the title of this record, From Bamako to Karen Crow, that's half the world there, you know, from West Africa to southwestern Louisiana.
We're trying to big everybody together, you know. Yeah. I think it just shows the influence that the kind of music we play in Louisiana and why we make it, because it comes from far away. I mean, as far as Africa, of course, and right down to a little town north of Lafayette called Karen Crow. It just shows, I think, the quality of the music and the different inspirations are, and the themes are almost the same, but they're so far apart, and so we kind of just bring them together.
And Molly, the root of the American blues, and how big a part of Cajun music is
that's a good question.
That African root?
That's a lot. I mean, you talk about, you know, New Orleans and people from Benin, you know, and that was New Orleans. Well, Louisiana was the only place where slaves were allowed to gather and play music, which is, you know, Congo Square.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very important in our music and creating music in Louisiana, because it was a freedom, it was a way of expression that everybody could do, not just, you know, just the hierarchy, whatever. And there were also Creoles in Louisiana, and it was a mixture of planters and probably free slaves or free people of color. I mean, it was a whole different strata. So, I mean, that's where jazz comes from. Mm-hmm. Blues comes from that area, of course. Cajun coming down from Nova Scotia and middle up with kind of a blues, and you have zydeco, and then you have swing. So it's all this stuff in Louisiana. So we're just doing it.
All on one record called From Bamako to Karankrow, which in a sense it's almost like a statement of mission accomplished. You know, the Cajun culture is now, it's strong, it's thriving, and now we can begin to look beyond our borders and see what else is out there. And
in a way, I mean, it's strong, but like in 1970, when we're doing this, they did the census. It was supposed to be 1 million French-speaking people in Southwest Louisiana. When they did the census in year 2000, there were less than 100,000. So it's come away. Yeah, it's stronger. But I mean, again, we lost great people like Dennis McGee and the fiddler Ken Ray Fountain, people who live throughout this just to play the music, not for any kind of fame or fortune for sure, but I mean they continue and many, many unknown people to continue to play this music and sing this music and continue this culture. That's what we strive for. That was the goal of Beau Soleil, and so we continue to do that because we dig deeper and deeper into the songs, and that's what we come out with.
But what strikes me is 30 years ago when I first met you, Michael, you came into the studio, just you and the fiddle, and you played a real Ah Dennis McGee, and you were playing Boisec Ardoin and Conray Fontenot. Now you're playing John Coltrane and James Brown and Mississippi Fred McDowell. And
they're all Cajuns, man. We Cajunize them, everybody.
they're Cajun at heart. Is that it?
Yeah. I think so. You have great quality musicians. You know, one of the best-known Cajun songs is a waltz called J'ai passé devant ta porte, I passed in front of your door, where the theme actually comes from Fernando Sor when he was doing the different variations of Mozart's Magic Flute.
The classical guitarist.
The classical guitarist who played in New Orleans. So,
did he really?
Yeah, so who knows who heard these things? I mean, how did this song come about? So nobody really knows. So we kind of go backwards and go forwards all at the same time.
Speaking with Michael Doucet and hearing the band Beau Soleil performing live in the Soundcheck studio, the album is called From Bamako to Karankrow. Bamako is, you know, big city, capital of Mali. Where or what is Karankrow?
That's a really good question, John. It goes back to this short story by George Washington Cable. He wasn't a great writer, but he wrote in Louisiana. He wrote about Congo Square, and then he went to the bayous, and he talks about this little town of Karankrow representing the Acadian culture. And it's not a very good story, but it's okay, and there's a knife fight and somebody dies. So I just kind of remixed the characters who die and who live, and just because it just seemed to work.
So it's a murder ballad.
It's a murder ballad, baby.
I mean, I thought you Cajuns were all about drinking and dancing and having good food.
And then we murder people.
All right.
I mean, what happens, this guy goes off to war and somebody goes to catch him. Anyway, somebody gets his girlfriend and he comes back. Everybody thought he was dead and they reunite together. And then the jealous guy stabs. He was going to stab the guy Bonaventure in the back, but actually they're dancing. So he stabs the woman Josephine in the back while they're waltzing.
All of this in Cajun French, so it sounds even gloomier, I suppose, and more romantic.
Yes.
It's the band Beau Soleil performing live in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Karankrow.
Oh, la belle Josephine, la reine de l'Ébayou. On espérait le retour de Bonaventure. Entre les temps passés, oui, ils n'ont arrivé. Elle a volé le cœur de Josephine. Mais quand Bonaventure est revenu de son tour, doit se tirer.
chez Joséphine. Elle lui dit, au revoir l'amour, l'amour. J'ai marié, y'a pas toi, y'a passé.
Cajun tale of woe called Karen Crow. That's the band Beau Soleil here live in the Soundcheck studio. That's on their new album called From Bamako to Karen Crow. Michael Doucet, when did you guys start capitalizing the S in Beau Soleil?
When people started calling us Beaujolais.
Really?
You know, just, no, we're not Beaujolais, we're Beau Soleil, we're a little drier. So I figured to make it clear there's no J, let's capitalize the S.
The name Beau Soleil, that goes back to the earliest days of Cajun culture.
Oh, yeah. And the end of Acadian culture, his name is Joseph Broussard de Beau Soleil. That was his nickname, who was a distant relative, by the way.
And of your family?
Oh, yeah. That's where the name comes from. And basically, he was one of the last of the rebels against the English. He was deported, went to San Domingo, and then came to Louisiana back in 1765
with a bunch of other Acadians.
Yeah, but about 270 of them, and right then they had yellow fever and it killed about half of them.
Wow.
Right then. So he kind of reestablished the Acadian society and really, because the Acadian society is not a political society, it's just a people society. It's an ethnic culture, and everybody is really worried and takes care of everybody else. So he wanted to bring everybody together. So about 1,000 Acadians actually came to Louisiana after the 10,000 of them being deported.
Mm-hmm. From what was Acadia, which is now what? Nova Scotia,
New Brunswick, and parts of Maine, north of the Kennebec.
Right. And Acadians became Cajuns.
Yeah.
And now we have Beau Soleil keeping Cajun culture alive and well. Did you grow up with this next song, You Gotta Move? Did you grow up with the Rolling Stones version or the Mississippi Fred McDowell?
I definitely heard the Rolling Stones version, which I love, but it was actually Butch Cage's version that I love. And I guess that cemented in me where this version came from.
All right. Well, it is a Mississippi Fred song.
Yeah.
And you guys have a version of it on the new record. You want to do it for us now?
We'd love to.
It's the band Beau Soleil with You Gotta Move. And Beau Soleil live on Soundcheck with the song You Gotta Move, a Mississippi Fred McDowell song that's been recorded many times, the Rolling Stones on Sticky Fingers, but many other versions too, and now recorded by Beau Soleil on their album From Bamako to Karen Crow. They've been playing for us live here in the Soundcheck studio, singing through it first time in English, then in Cajun French. If you really wanted to mess with your listeners' heads, Michael, you should sing Come On in My Kitchen, the Robert Johnson as the third verse. It would fit perfectly. It's like basically the same song.
You want to sing that with us, John?
Do you want to have listeners when we're done?
I don't know, man. You could sing Ipanema. You know, let's go.
Now, is there a younger generation of Cajuns growing up, owning their tradition, speaking the language, playing this music?
Of course. Yes, it is. There's more musicians than ever. It's a different culture. I mean, it's not all farmers or people who are isolated. They didn't grow up speaking French, so it's kind of a contrived thing. But they're still trying to maintain the French as long as you can. I mean, when we grew up, I mean, everybody spoke French. It was like no big deal. You go to a grocery store or anything, everybody was in French. The courts were in French, but that has changed totally. So the basic roots of speaking French every day is probably non-existent anymore. But still, the music is there, the food is there, and the culture is definitely strong. And there's people who are aware now of what we have and not to lose it.
From Bamako to Karen Crow, the new album by Beausoleil, sort of extending that Cajun family to John Coltrane, to Mississippi Fred McDowell, to Roswell Rudd, who wrote the song Bamako, and to James Brown. And this song, which we're going to end with, you do sing in Cajun French. How is it singing James Brown in French?
Well, that's the only way I can sing James Brown. I mean, I couldn't do it justice singing in English. So it's like, if James Brown was from Southwest Louisiana, that might be how he would sing it. I don't know.
Michael Doucet and the band Beausoleil. Always great to have you guys here. Thanks so much.
John, thank you so much.
I'll Go Crazy. Beausoleil covers James Brown.
Mais si tu m'as quitté, ça me rendre fou. Si tu me laissais, ça me rendre couillon. Parce que je t'aime, je t'aime, je t'aime. Je t'aime un peu trop.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, we're revisiting some stellar recent live performances here in the Soundcheck studio. Tune in to hear artists like the soul singer Alice Russell, psychedelic folk rock band Yellowbirds, singer-songwriter Eleanor Friedberger, and the one and only Bobby McFerrin. Tune in again tomorrow, 9 p.m. Till then, I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.